Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Celtics post-game show. Cal Lee here. Tough loss for the Boston Celtics as they find themselves on the back end, losing to the Golden State Warriors in a hard-fought victory. A game that very much looked like the Boston Celtics was about to dominate. And unfortunately, the Boston Celtics fell short 106-101 to the Golden State Warriors. Got a lot to discuss, a lot to talk about. But of course, you know, the only way that we're going to be able to do that is to make sure that we've got our peoples on. So should have my man Mike Munger along with me. Mike, are you with me?
Yeah, what's up, man? What a game. You know, unreal. You know, I mean, fortunately, I was lucky enough to make it home in the weather to see a good small chunk of from the second quarter on, so I got to see a good portion of the game. But you know, from everything that I gathered, just following it as best I could, it was a complete tale of two halves. Celtics dominated the first half, outplayed them, did a good job defensively on Golden State's big guns, and in the second half, just their inexperience kind of showed a little bit. You know, they switched off of Steph Curry, which I have absolutely no idea why they would ever do that. They left him wide open. They didn't play good defense and came back to bite him a little bit. You know, I mean, Avery Bradley can't guard everybody. You know, I guess between that and a couple turnovers and a couple lack of calls, you know, this is what happens. But they played well. They fought hard and, you know, again, they're still going to be a playoff team and a tough out for somebody in the first round.
Yeah, the Boston Celtics really showed you what they can potentially become with a little bit more continuity, a little bit more security. And it's games like these are the games that you have to measure the talent level of what this Boston Celtics team can do. This was a game clearly of two, like you said. Two halves completely. Their offensive game was just absolutely pristine in the first half. The Golden State Warriors are basically on their heels. The Celtics dropped 65 points in the first half against one of the better defenses in the NBA. And then in the second half, and you know, it's like the proverbial, they shot their load in the first half, because in that second half, the execution offensively just was not there. Give credit, though, to the Golden State Warriors. They did figure out a way to get the Celtics to take more difficult shots. And when you look at the statistics are a little bit misleading, because you would basically look at it across the board and think that the Celtics really should have been the ones that have won this basketball game. But this is what happens when you deal with battle-tested, playoff-balanced teams like the Golden State Warriors. No lead is safe, especially when you have the Splash Brothers, a really great collective effort. And Steve Kerr obviously spiked something in their curry chicken, because in that second half, their offense woke up. And to relinquish a 26-point lead, you know, against a very battle-tested, tough-minded Celtics team, it just clearly tells you what type of mindset Steve Kerr has this Warriors team on. But again, kudos to the Boston Celtics, because they did fight from wire to wire, even with opportunities to possibly win the basketball game. They still fell short to a much better Golden State Warriors team. So we got a lot to discuss with regards to this game. And then myself and Mike, we really appreciate everybody joining on. We want everyone to chime in and tune in with us here. on the Boston Celtics post-game show here on CLNS Radio, powered by Lynda.com and Pete Brewing. Give us a call, 347-215-7771. Hopefully later on we'll have our man Jared Weiss on the line. He'll be able to give us a little bit of discussion with regards to the disappointing loss that the Celtics suffered tonight against the Golden State Warriors. Mike, I want to start off because, you know, you touched on a couple of really good points with regards to toward the end of this game. Now, we already knew that the Golden State Warriors was going to probably try and make a push. People could probably look at that first half and say, yeah, you know, they kind of lulled themselves into this basketball game. They were sleepwalking through the first half. I really think that the Boston Celtics kind of shot like out of a cannon. But in the end of that game, when the Celtics, I think, had numerous opportunities in order to kind of distance themselves from the Golden State Warriors, it just didn't seem like the Celtics were on the same type of page offensively that they were when they had been in the first half of the game. What did you see, or what was it that you were kind of looking at specifically down the stretch that worried you most once you saw the Warriors chipping away at that lead and basically getting down to the six-minute mark where you really didn't feel as confident? If you did feel confidence, or you're questioning of whether or not you felt any confidence the Celtics were going to be able to pull out this victory with the way the Warriors are playing?
Well, I mean, I did think that we were going to win. I thought that, despite Golden State making a little bit of a run, I thought that we'd be able to hold on. But the biggest issue that I saw tonight was there were a few guys out there that were playing knee ball instead of wee ball. Offensively and defensively, there was a lot of miscommunications. I mean, like someone like Jay Crowder, you appreciate the fact that he had the 17 rebounds, played good defense, was physical for you on the inside, but 17 shots for Jay Crowder just is unacceptable. Now, Isaiah Thomas, I know everybody's in love with him. He's still going through that first date, that first month of the romance period here, but, 21 shots when it's not falling, 3 for 11 from 3. He just forced us some shots tonight. He was in attack mode. He was trying to go to the rim, didn't get the couple calls that he normally gets, but at the same time, I mean, you shouldn't have your point guard taking 21 shots. It's unacceptable. I don't like it. And then, some turnovers tonight, having turnover at a couple key turnovers, it just absolutely frustrated me beyond belief. I mean, if you look at Golden State and how they're constructed as a team, outside of Andrew Bogut, they don't have anybody that's going to challenge you in the interior. So when he's not in the game, there should be zero reason why you don't go to Tyler Zeller and Brandon Bass on the post. Hell, you can even post up one of the small forwards or bring somebody off the bench and just get him inside. Go to the basket. They don't have any shot blockers. They're not trying to play defense. Now, I understand they have they're a little bit better defensively than normal, but it's still Golden State. They'd rather outscore you than try to shut you down. The lack of attack mode going to the rim was a little frustrating. Again, just some guys trying too hard to prove that they're the man, instead of playing team ball. You saw it, again, Isaiah Thomas. I really like what he brings to the team. Great energy guy. Very good scorer. But when your point guard takes 21 shots and only has 5 assists, I just have a huge problem with something like that.
So you have more of an issue with the fact that he took 21 shots in general, or just the fact that he was taking that many shots towards the end of the game when the Celtics were struggling to find their offense? Because in the first half of the game, Isaiah Thomas was completely on fire. He basically scored, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 21 points in about 7 or 8 minutes of time play coming off of the bench to help the Celtics propel themselves to that 20-point advantage. But clearly, whatever happened in the second half, and Steve Kerr obviously game-planned around figuring a way to corral Isaiah Thomas, and you can lend to the idea that because Isaiah Thomas had been playing on the West Coast for the duration of his career so far, that he's already played against teams like the Warriors, and the Warriors have figured out a way to be able to defend him a lot quicker than probably teams in the Eastern Conference will. Is it more so the fact that he was just taking bad shots on the back end in the second half rather than what it was that he was providing for the Celtics in the first?
I just don't think that he played as smart as we've seen him in the first few games that he's been here. I think he had I think it was 15 or 17 points in the first half, and he ended up with 20 for the game. So they did a good job corralling him defensively in the second half. But I just, you know, I mean, one, in general, I don't like the score first point guards. I mean, I understand he's a backup guard coming off the bench. But if you're going to be the point guard for this team or for any team, I think your number one job should be distribution and running the offense. And if you get a good shot in the scheme of the offense and the flow of the offense, then fine. By all means, take it. But even that last three, that last pull-up three, he was off balance. He didn't go straight up. It looked like he was, you know, leaning a little bit. He completely rushed it. He could have gotten a better shot. He really could have. So I thought that he should have continued attacking the basket. I don't know if maybe it was just because, you know, the way they play out west, there's a lot less defense. But he's one of the top 10 fourth quarter scorers in the NBA. He gets to the rim a lot, gets some, you know, a lot of free throws in the fourth quarter of games. He's one of the top five or six in the league at that. Don't shoot jump shots. There's no reason. They don't have anybody in the team that can actually guard you one-on-one if you take them to the basket. I think if you make it easy for them when you have somebody like Sean Livingston or Klay Thompson on you and just kind of back up and shoot jump shots, then, you know, you're letting them off the hook. And then defensively, again, he's 5'9", whatever it is that, you know, they claim him to be. But when you have Sean Livingston posting you up, you got to do something. You know, you got to bring help. You know, unless it's off of Curry's guy, then you got to help him out. You got to do something. You know, try to be a little more physical with him. You can't be such a liability when the offensive game just isn't working in the second half. So they took advantage of Isaiah Thomas on both ends in the second half. You know, credit to them for it working. But yeah, again, it's just some things are just frustrating. I mean, too many threes in my opinion tonight. I understand that's the way the league is. It's kind of how Brad wants it. And when it's working, it's pretty. But 31 three-point shots, you know, going 8 for 31, that's just not a good percentage. Between Crowder and Isaiah Thomas, they shot 18 threes between the two of them. So just wasn't a good game overall, in my opinion.
You're tuned to the Boston Celtics post-game show. The Celtics lose to the Warriors 106-101 on their home court. CLNS Radio's exclusive coverage of the post-game show. Be sure to tune in with us, powered by Lynda.com. With Lynda.com, you'll be able to get yourself set up with anything that you want to know or want to learn about. Start up with a membership, free 10-day trial membership. Go to www.lynda.com, put in CLNS Radio, and take advantage of that offer. Learn something new today. Cal Lee here and Mike the Scotsman Munger, as we discuss the disappointing loss for the Boston Celtics here. 106-101 was the score. One of the things that I was really curious and I wanted to get your take on with this, Mike, was the fact, and you brought up the fact that, you know, the Celtics took 31 three-point shots. Now, in the beginning of this game, I believe the Golden State Warriors defensively was just allowing the Celtics to get great open looks. And a lot of those open looks were three-point type shots or, you know, mid-range jumpers. I think that they were hitting within stride, hitting within ease. You got guys like Brandon Bass, Avery Bradley that are capable of making those shots. And I think the more that they started getting into that rhythm, the better the range became for them when they were able to shoot and make the threes. I'm pretty sure that out of those eight threes, they made, I think, like six of them in that first half when they went on that 65-point blitz against the Warriors. But in that second half, they just felt the need to be three ball happy. And this is, again, another byproduct, you know, of the Celtics team, you know, where the talent and their basketball IQ seems to fail them. There were numerous opportunities where I think you were even mentioning before where the Celtics could have beaten the Warriors to death in the front court, just exposing them in the paint because the Warriors decided to play small. And with that effort, I think the biggest question is, why is it still this trend with the Celtics to get three ball happy when at times they really could be exposing the weaknesses of their opposition when they choose to go small to be able to take advantage of that and continue to develop an offensive style where they have that kind of balance? It just seems like they're still becoming a one-ended team where if they don't have rhythm in their offense, they don't become as effective as they normally would be.
Well, I think, unfortunately, I think unfortunately the what we're seeing right now in the NBA, I think that's becoming a common philosophy with the whole 3-point shooting. I mean, the NBA wants the offense to be up. They don't like defense. It kind of goes back to the late 80s and 90s ball where things got physical and teams just didn't know how to score against tough defenses. They do everything they can to open a game. And I think a lot of players these days are being taught in that philosophy of either you get to the rim or you shoot a three. You know, the art of the mid-range game is lost on a lot of these people. And I think that's what we're seeing. And again, you know, I get it. You know, was it all the analytics and the statistics that say if you shoot 40% from three, it's still better than 50% from two? I get it. But that doesn't necessarily mean shooting that many threes is a smart way to run your offense. You know, I mean, it's a much better shot to take a wide open 18-footer than a semi-contested 25-footer. It's part of the philosophy, I guess, and we're going to have to learn to live with it. And, you know, if you have the shooters to make it work, then fine. But we don't necessarily have the shooters overall to play that style of basketball right now. I mean, maybe we will sometime down the road after the draft, free agency, whatever. But, again, I just think that you just have to just play basketball. Don't sit there and try and you know, do what the other teams do, especially in a team like Golden State where they have two of the best shooters in the NBA on the same team. They can do that. They can get away with it. You know, we can't. I mean, honestly, outside of Avery Bradley and if he's on a good night, Isaiah Thomas, we don't have anybody that I would consider a lethal outside shooter. So I just don't get it. You know, it's just something about the way that style is. Maybe it's my old age coming out. Maybe just because I just think that up-tempo, fast-break basketball where you attack the rim, you know, and you take whatever shots wide open is better. But it's just something wrong there. But again, you know, I understand it. I get it. And I understand that, you know, a lot of math and analytics, like I said before, it's going to take a little while for me to adjust to it.
All right. Let's go to the phones. I think we have a caller on here who wants to chime in. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Boston Celtics post-game show. Let us know who you are and what you think about today's game.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's happening, Scotty?
What's happening, Carl? Just watching this game, and I knew once they got up by 26 points, this was still not going to be an easy game to win. I know that sounds crazy, but the way that they shoot the basketball and the way that they can just come back on everyone is just remarkable. But I'm looking at the stats here, and for as good as the Celtics were offensively in the first half, and it looked like they were going to put up 70 plus in the first half, the end of the game numbers are pretty average. They shot 37% from the field, 81 from three. Now, the way that Isaiah Thomas was getting to the rim and the guards were getting to the rim, for this team to be shooting 31 threes is ridiculous to me. You can do that, but if they're not falling, then it's just a bad way to run your offense. And I thought that they had some success. I thought that Brandon Bass had some success when he was aggressive. I don't understand why they didn't drive it, but it's just frustrating to know that this team is in a playoff hunt and you're up by 26-6 at home. You're thinking that you're going to get a win. You have a tough game in Cleveland on Tuesday night, and then you come back home for Utah. Then a two-game swing here coming up. It's just like this would have been a great one to have, and it's frustrating. And you could have made up ground on some of the other teams, but Just a couple thoughts, and I'll leave you guys with this. I absolutely think, and I know what you what you think, Scotty, just talking to you off the air and seeing what you have to say. But this team can compete with Atlanta in the first round. So if they can, I think that they can series out. And I know this is getting a little bit on the game, but I would sort of like your thoughts on it. I think that they have the personnel. I think that the Celtics team is running very well, and we'll see if they commit. But I'll just, as a closing thought, your favorite Celtics player of all time, I think, Scotty, that may surpass Larry Bird and Paul Pierce for you. And Evan Turner was an absolute ghost in the second half. I'll leave you with that bleak ring. Let's go Celtics.
All right, thanks for the call. Really just to kind of piggyback off of his point with regards to the Celtics and this love of shooting the three ball, I think what was interesting, and I think it pretty much was an indictment on how quickly the offensive philosophy backfired on the Celtics. I think it was 99-98 with the Golden State Warriors having the one-point lead. I think Steph Curry shot the three ball to put them up by one. And there was a rat race for a loose ball. The Celtics wind up getting it on the turnover. And on the break, which has been the signature for the Celtics tonight against the Warriors, where they just completely had out-fast break one of the faster or better running teams in the NBA in the Golden State Warriors, Jay Crowder comes out there on the break, and he's looking to pass the basketball to Avery Bradley, who is camped out by the three-point line, and all he needed to do was just run to the basket. And Jay Crowder could have hit him on a bounce pass for him to take an easy two layup. But because Bradley sat out there by the three-point line, Jay Crowder's instinct in passing the basketball with the expectation that he's coming to a free lane towards the basket winds up being a turnover. And you can tell that his body expression was just utter disappointment with Bradley because he's like, come to the ball. You know, and that's the problem that I see with the Boston Celtics at times, is that this is what I mean by basketball IQ and understanding what you're doing, what you're working with. Never mind whether or not the Boston Celtics had missed like the last 11 three-point shots. It's just basic basketball. You have 3 points sitting right there, and it's easier to get them when you go to the basket, when you go for a layup. But it just seems like they are content with just hanging around the arc to shoot the ball. And that, to me, in a crucial situation, especially when the Celtics have an opportunity to regain the lead against the Golden State Warriors, a turnover like that is just a measurement of how further the Celtics need to get to in order to be able to compete with the better teams. Now, it also lends to the point of what he's saying is that he thinks that the Celtics are capable of beating a team like the Atlanta Hawks. And the reason why I disagree with that notion is because nobody on the Celtics team, with the exception of Brandon Bass, has the playoff acumen to be able to play against guys like Paul Millsap, Al Horford, and Jeff Teague. At least those guys have played in the playoffs. And those guys play in a system where there's a set of discipline that they need to exercise because they know that they don't have superstars on their team. So I can't, even though I think that they can compete with the Hawks, there's no way that I'm confident that they can beat the Hawks when you see certain plays like this happen at the end of games that they're capable of winning. What would be your thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, you know, it was a good call by Mad Dog. You brought up a lot of good points, and I agree with him to an extent there. I think that If we get matched up against a team like Chicago or Washington, who have it on both ends of the floor, who have the veteran experience, the playoff know-how with some of the guys that they have, I don't think we stand a chance. However, the Hawks don't scare me. They really don't. I mean, I don't know if we'll beat them in the series, but I wouldn't bet against us beating them in the series. They really, you know, they don't scare me. I think that they're a fraudulent number one team. They're not as good as what they're playing, I think. And come playoff time, you need a superstar. You need a stud if you want to be considered a legitimate contender. So I'm not buying the Hawks. Again, it'd be tough to beat them in a seven-game series because they haven't been playing so well. So you're right, they do run a good system. But you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility for us to beat them. I don't fear them, but, you know, it was a good point. I mean, you know, but you're right, though. I mean, that's the difference between teams like that and teams like ours where, you know, they believe in their system, they run it well, and we still have guys trying to learn how to play with each other.
You tuned to the Boston Celtics post-game show. Give us a call here, 347-215-7771. We'd like to hear from you, get your thoughts about tonight's game. The Boston Celtics lose 106-101. So, definitely, you know, when you look at this game for what it's worth, a lot of good things. One, the Celtics shot the basketball. You know, for a team that struggles at times being able to create shots and find shots, the Celtics shot the ball 109 times tonight, you know, against a team that, for the most part, they defend decently. They defend enough where they're going to allow you to milk the clock when they're active. Now, in that first half, you can clearly see that the Warriors are not nearly as active defensively as they were in the second. But even still, the Celtics had managed to figure out a way to get off about 58 shots in that first half. And a lot of it, too, was also effort plays. Guys like Jonas Jerebko, Tyler Zeller, Brandon Bass, giving the Celtics opportunities to take shots, getting those 50-50 balls. What were the things that stood out for you more from the bench players for the Celtics, you know, that can definitely, you could say, you know what, there's a bright spot here, and we definitely have to keep this trend going because we're going to need that depth for this stretch run if there's an expectation for the Celtics team to make the playoffs.
Well, the guy that I really want to single out for what I thought was amazing play, and he's not necessarily a bench player, but, you know, there were times this season where he wasn't in the rotation as much, and that's Brandon Bass. I mean, he's a great glue guy. He's that guy that, you know, you need on your team if you want to be a contender. You need guys like that that are willing to come in and do whatever it takes. I thought the play of Brandon Bass tonight was absolutely amazing. I mean, when he's in attack mode, I'm not gonna be as outlandish as Scal is and say that he could be the best one-on-one player in the NBA because, you know, I get what he was trying to say. But at the same time, when Brandon Bass is aggressive and goes to the basket, he's just ferocious. He really is. I mean, the dunks that he had tonight, taking the ball to the basket, you know, attacking the rim, that's the kind of thing that we need to see. And I thought that, you know, I thought that he definitely deserves a lot of praise tonight. Again, Jay Crowder, 17 rebounds, playing tough, hard-nosed defense, physical player. And if he plays within himself and understands his limitations as a player, then 9 times out of 10, he's going to play a phenomenal game for you. But, you know, just every now and then, there's a couple turnovers here that just kind of make you shake your head, you know, shots that he takes sometimes. And again, I believe it was Crowder in the second half who had the one shot that went in 90% of the way and the ball just somehow didn't stay in the basket. I want to say it was him on a three-pointer that could have either given us the lead or tied the game and possibly swung things in our favor, but...
Yeah, that was a shot. They had two consecutive opportunities. One was the Brandon Bass corner shot, baseline shot, that went a little short. And then when they got the rebound, they passed it out to Crowder, who was open for the three. But it was after dribble penetration, I believe, from Isaiah Thomas. And Crowder shot the three, and it just basically, you know, went in and out. Interestingly enough, though, Mike, on that particular play, though, I was a little disappointed that Isaiah Thomas just didn't take it straight to the rack. For some reason, he pulled up, and I don't know what he thought. You know, he probably assumed that Andrew Bogut was attempting to block the shot, but I hadn't seen anything from Bogut tonight or from any of the Warriors' frontcourt players that should have impeded the idea of the aggressive nature that the Celtics guards should have taken once they got into the painted area. They should have been putting floaters. They should have been taking it, driving it hard to the rim. So while I agree that that was a great shot by Crowder because it was an open look, I was more disappointed that Thomas, that Bradley, those guys were not nearly as aggressive enough in the second half taking that ball to the rim, especially the last 3 minutes of the game when the Celtics had opportunities to put that ball in the basket.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Again, I think it kind of goes back to that what we were talking about earlier with the three-point shooting philosophy. Guys think an open three is better than a you know, like I think a 3-point shot is better than a 2-point shot just because of the extra point you get. But again, that doesn't mean you pass up a chance at an easier shot. You know, even for a guy like Isaiah Thomas, he's very gifted around the rim. So even him going in there and shooting a floater, if you challenge the 7-footer and the 7-footer comes out to challenge you, well, what that's doing is leaving the rim open for offensive rebound opportunities. And we have guys that can do that. I mean, you know, I agree Bogut was completely ineffective tonight. He did have the 10 rebounds, but I don't necessarily think he played a great game. We were able to attack him, but they're the guy that they had in there most of the night. And shockingly, the guy that played the most minutes for them was Draymond Green. He's the guy that, you know, when he's down there, if he's your shot blocker for the Golden State Warriors, you need to just go at him. Put him in foul trouble, okay? Make it so that he can't hurt you on the other end of the floor. Go right at him because, you know, he's not the guy. He's not a great defensive player. He's not going to do anything to you on the interior. So I think that I agree with you. It would have been nice to see Isaiah Thomas attacking the rim on certain plays and going for the finish instead of focusing on passing it out to Crowder. It was a little disheartening. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, like I said, they're going to learn. This is a learning experience. You learn more from a loss than any win any day of the week. So hopefully they take the lessons learned from this game, put it together, and go out there and beat the NBA's new favorite team on Tuesday in Cleveland.
The Celtics post-game show powered by CLNS Radio and Peak Organic Brewing. Peak Organic Brewing showcasing some of the Northeast's finest ingredients for beers fans across the country. Pure ingredients, delicious beer. Follow them at Peak Brewing on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook at facebook.com/peakbrewing. I think we have another caller calling in to weigh in on tonight's game. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Boston Celtics post-game show powered by CLNS Radio. Let us know who you are and what you thought about tonight's game.
It's Jared from the Garden.
Hey, Jared. What's going on, my man?
So I talked to Draymond Green after the game. Talking about Isaiah Thomas, he wanted to give a big shout-out to Isaiah Thomas and all the little guys overachieving out there. And we were talking about how Draymond has been such an effective guy in the low post this season. He said that he told me his goal was to be Defensive Player of the Year. And it pivoted towards talking about Isaiah Thomas and the way that he has really changed his team. And it's clear that Thomas is making waves around the league since he joined the Celtics, because he said that he's been noticing how Thomas has completely revitalized his team, saying basically all the same things that we've been saying here in Boston this week about what Thomas is doing for them.
Hey, Jared, one of the things that I think a lot of people were concerned about with the Celtics is regarding those last few minutes of the game where they just couldn't seem to put together the kind of points that were necessary to kind of best the Golden State Warriors. What was the feel in the locker room for those guys? Was it more on their part that they just didn't execute? Or, you know, is it just a byproduct of when you're dealing with a team, in many people's perception, is a championship caliber type team with the Golden State Warriors?
Yeah, well, I mean, Brad Stevens was obviously disappointed, but one thing he pointed out is that he loves the unit that he has right now, and he's really excited to get back to work with them for the next game. And I think that they're looking at the way that they performed over the past 5 games since they made that trade, and the team is completely different. They're going with, I asked him specifically about this lineup here, where Jarebko is playing the 5, Crowder's playing the 4. And he pointed out they're not really playing low post, but they are matching up as traditional 4s and 5s. But it is something that's viable for this team long term. And going up against the team with their best lineup is Barnes at the 4 and Green at the 5. They're basically doing the same thing. And that lineup has been just about the best lineup in all of basketball this year. And he was saying that being able to go up against them and hold their own, although they did certainly collapse in the third quarter there, they, for the most part, held their own this game. That really, it shows a lot for this. It shows a lot to the viability of that lineup as a closing lineup for the rest of the regular season. And, of course, right now they're looking at a good shot at a playoff spot here.
Jared Weiss joining us here on the Boston Celtics post-game show, CLNS beat writer. Jared, man, what was the one thing that impressed you about what the Celtics did in that first half? 65 points. They were just blistering. I think they shot over 50% in that first half. I mean, everything about their ball play, fast break points, shooting the basketball, defensively stifling one of the best offensive teams in the NBA. What was it that impressed you more than anything about what you saw from this first half of play from them?
It would be the turnovers. Evan Turner, as we've called him a few times this year, but Evan Turner, he played 12 minutes in the first quarter. He went 4-for-7 from the field. He had 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 10 points, and 1 turnover, and that was the only turnover the Celtics committed in the entire second half of this game. The second quarter, they were really good, but that first quarter was just so unbelievably explosive. And the way that they were raining threes, they had a possession where I think they might have hit, was it 3 threes in a row? And they had everybody on the floor pretty much hit one. It was Crowder hit one, I think. Jarebko hit one. James Young hit one. I think the one thing that got, it was like a really small thing, doesn't even really play into the narrative of this game, but just all the little things that this team is doing so much better in the last week or two. One thing was that James Young, who I have been calling to be get a lot of playing time and even be a starter potentially on this team for a while now, I think Evan Turner has made it pretty clear he should be the starting small forward, and they're going to stick with that. But he had this one play where Young got the ball. I think it was in the second quarter. Young got the ball. He was on the elbow. He was facing away from the basket. As he caught the ball, he pivoted perfectly on his back foot right into a perfectly set jump shot and nailed the three. And just to see the improvement in mechanics and the improvement in effort by so many players on this team over the course of the season, and we're seeing that adding Jarebko and especially adding Isaiah Thomas has really made things easier for everybody else, and they're able to thrive a lot more. And that's what really happened in the first quarter.
Jared Weiss joining us. Jared, man, one of the things that really impressed me was what I'm noticing is in the gameplay of Marcus Smart. The Celtics were down against the Warriors, and he basically had a one-on-one type situation with a few seconds left on the shot clock. He takes this cold-blooded three to help the Celtics take that lead before the Warriors went on their run in order to win the basketball game. But what did that tell you about Marcus Smart's ability being that first-round pick and having that confidence is something that I didn't notice from before?
Well, I mean, Smart, offensively, it's been pretty inconsistent. It's been mostly three-pointers. He had that rainbow three you're talking about in Curry's face, where he took a huge rainbow, but Curry was like 3 feet back or 3 steps back from him. I have no idea why he took such a big rainbow on that shot, but I mean, you do love to see Smart being able to hit that shot. The thing with Smart is his defense has just been so good. He actually, I think it was in the first half, he played 15 minutes. It was at a certain point in the second quarter, played 15 minutes and had a plus 25. While covering two main MVP candidates in Klay Thompson for the most part and Steph Curry a little bit. So to see Smart's versatility and his effort really making a massive impact defensively has been phenomenal. And his offense has been enough to keep the team afloat. And with Thomas coming in behind him, who's scoring per 36 minutes, has been pretty incredible. I mean, he's scoring 20 points a game every single game, and he's only playing about 28 to 29 minutes. Actually, I'll tell you, it's 139 minutes in 5 games, so I can't do that one off the top of my head. But it's looking about around 20 minutes or so. He's averaging 22 points. So they seem to have a perfect balance with their backcourt right now, which is great. And about it's 28 minutes almost exactly for Isaiah Thomas a game. And that's allowing the balance that they have scoring-wise that they didn't have earlier when they had Rondo, it's allowing Smart to be able to pick his spots offensively. He doesn't have much pressure on himself to be the scoring guy, the ball-moving guy when he's in the game, because Evan Turner can fill that role. Isaiah Thomas is excellent in that role. And we're seeing Smart is playing better basketball overall now since the addition of Thomas, and his focus on defense has been really game-changing. Now, the second half, it definitely fell apart. Steph Curry ended up with 37. Klay Thompson, although he only went 2-for-10 from downtown tonight, he ended up with 20 points in the end. So the defensive play on the, you know, probably the best backcourt duo in the league, one of the best in recent history, it ended up basically playing out as it usually plays out for guys that face Golden State. But Smart's effort is notable. His impact was notable. And the fact that on almost every single game he's hit a clutch three at the end of the game really speaks volumes.
All right, last question before we let you go here, Jared. The postseason roster rosters have to be finalized by the end of tonight. And listen, with the talk about the Boston Celtics still being in the mix to possibly making this postseason, would you expect or do you think that the Celtics probably should go out and get someone that's available on the free market at this point to add to this roster? Or do you believe with confidence that Brad Stevens works with this particular team, gets these guys together for this final stretch, and that they could probably make, you know, make that run where they could possibly make that the one of the lower seeds in the Eastern Conference.
I mean, right now, I can't really think of anybody out there that it would really make sense for them to get. The thing is, with the way the East is set up right now, they can fall two games behind from the playoffs and be actually in a pretty good draft position, or they can make the playoffs and have a mediocre draft pick this upcoming draft. So we'll see how they want to play it. JaVale McGee is a potential guy to get bought out tonight, although the latest reports I was hearing was that there's no negotiations right now on a potential buyout. And if he doesn't get bought out tonight, I think it's guys have to get cut by midnight in order for them to be playoff eligible once they sign for a new team. So McGee would have to get cut tonight if he wants to play in the playoffs or a new team. I feel like there's a lot of other teams in the league that would be a better fit for McGee as far as a need standpoint, but the Celtics might be one of the few teams interested in bringing him in, and he would definitely fill a need for them, as he'd be as solid as Tyler Zeller has been in the low post, and Brandon Bass has been pretty good as a low post defender as well. They obviously pale in comparison to JaVale McGee's shot-altering ability, but of course, JaVale McGee is an incredibly erratic player. So we'll see what happens there. But they don't. Once Kelly Olynyk comes back, this team has got decent depth, and they have a pretty good rotation that they can rely on. And it would be good enough for them at least to get to the playoffs and not get destroyed. But to expect them to, let's say, go up against Atlanta or maybe Cleveland and be able to go six games is probably unlikely.
All right, my man Jared Weiss, man, doing all things and covering all things Boston Celtics basketball, man. We appreciate you jumping on and giving us a little bit of insight after tonight's game.
Thanks, boys. Talk soon.
All right. Jared Weiss for CLNS Radio. This is CLNS Radio's post-game show. Celtics lose to the Warriors 106-101 in a very exciting yet very disappointing basketball game. Without it being not that effort was not the question here, and the Celtics are always good for that, always putting their best effort on the basketball court. They fall short to the Splash Brothers 106-101. Some interesting points, Mike, that Jared's made with regards to what we're seeing from the Celtics team and what he observed while he was there at the Garden tonight. What were your thoughts about Jared's assessment regarding James Young with regards to what Brad Stevens' expectations are with this team moving forward?
Well, James Young, I want to compare him to a powder keg. I mean, it's just going to take one good spark, and he's going to explode for the Celtics. I mean, again, he pointed out the positive that he had on the jump shot where he nailed the three, but he's a shooter, and he only took five shots, you know. If you're a shooter and you're a guy that came in as a first-round draft pick expected to be a scorer for this team at the two or the three, I think he needs to get more shots. I really do. I mean, I it's my personal bias just because I don't like the fact that the guy thinks he's a better player than he really is. But I think that Evan Turner's minutes need to be cut a little bit, and I think James Young's minutes need to be extended a little bit. I think he should be playing more than Evan Turner. I think if you need an absolute backup point guard style situation where just you need somebody to come in and be a ball handler and, you know, try to do a couple things for you a few minutes here and there, then fine, you can get away with Evan Turner. But at the same time, you know, I'd rather see James Young shooting jump shots than see Evan Turner shooting anything. I mean, for the first quarter that he had where I believe Jared said he went 4-for-7, had the 10 points, the 6 rebounds, and the 3 assists, he ended up going 4-for-12 for the game, only had 9 rebounds and the 6 assists, so he had 2 rebounds and 3 assists in the second half, and that was it. He didn't do anything else, and for what it's worth, he got absolutely torched on the defensive end by whoever he was guarding. It's like teams know to go at him, so I would love to see James Young get into the rotation more. I want to see that kid have that one breakout game where you could just see he gets his confidence back. I don't want to see – the worst thing that happened to a shooter is if you start questioning yourself as a shooter. And I don't want to see that happening with James Young. He's a young kid. I get it. I think he's only 19 years old, so he's got a long way to go. But we did draft him in the first round for a reason. And it wasn't to sit there and watch Evan Turner go out there and make mistake after mistake. But we can have a guy like that. That's the kind of guy you put on the floor if you want to play the driving dish for three. That's the kind of the player that you need out there. He's the guy that is more likely to explode and go off for the behind the three-point line than say, Evan Turner or Marcus Smart or Jay Crowder. So I want to see James Young get more minutes. I think that, you know, eventually we will see it. But, I do like what the potential he brings to the table. And it's funny that Jared brought up JaVale McGee. That's one of those guys where everybody wants him on their team, but when he's on your team, it's like you have to live with the stupidity that comes along with it. You know, he's a very athletic big. He's very long. He's a great shot blocker. He's going to put up a lot of highlight plays. But then, like you see on TNT, he's going to be the guy that leads the Shaq and the Fool highlights every single night because you know he's going to do something absolutely insane, absolutely ridiculous. He's going to miss a dunk or he's going to try and dunk it from the three-point line, something stupid. He's going to make a dumb pass. So bringing him in will be a good idea, give you a defensive presence in the paint. Then you got to live with the other stuff that comes along with it. So I thought it was an interesting guy for Jared to bring up there. You know, I'd live with it. You know, it would mean that, you know, you probably wouldn't see anything, you know, in the playoffs from Chadwick Randolph. I think, he'd be the odd big out, and then you get JaVale McGee in there for some playing time, which is fine by me. You know, McGee is as excitable as he is. He's still a much better player than Chadwick Randolph anyway. So I thought that was an interesting point that he brought up. And you know what? I'd be all for it. Why not? Bring the guy in. Let him get some playoff minutes. Let him try and help this team. And see what we do in the first round.
You're tuned to the Celtics post-game show. Cal Lee, Mike Munger discussing the Boston Celtics as they fall short to the Golden State Warriors 106-101. Be sure to tune in to CLNS Radio as we give you exclusive coverage of Boston Celtics, the Boston Bruins, the New England Patriots, and a lot of things are happening. And spring training is on the horizon, so Boston Red Sox baseball is on the come up, so you want to have CLNS Radio as your go-to source. In order to do that, you need to download the app. Be sure to go to your iOS or Android and download the CLNS Radio app. Get some of your favorite shows, the Evening Podcast, the Celtics Beat Show, the Patriots Beat Show, Red Sox Beat Show. Be sure to get all of those all nicely, finely packaged in the CLNS Radio sports app. So be sure to download that and start getting plugged in to your favorite podcast shows that are available on the regular. Mike, you brought up an interesting question, interesting point about James Young. And before we, you know, get to some of the statistics, I also want to get your take on who the player of the game was for you and your opinion, even though the Celtics lost. The one thing about James Young, and it is an interesting thought process that, you know, I think has really been a head scratcher for a lot of people. What do you think really is the issue at this particular point? Because I don't think that this is any more about it being an experiment. Jared brought up a very good point that, you know, with the way that the Eastern Conference is structured right now and the way that the Celtics kind of sit in this division, even if they go through a horrible losing streak and take themselves out of the playoff picture, this team isn't going to be the worst team in basketball. And so they're not going to have like a lottery pick, but they're certainly going to have an average pick come next year. So clearly the idea is that you want the best possible playmakers on this team, maximizing the potential of what they could do. And even, the kicker would be the fact that they're playing in this playoff chase. So what exactly is it? And I'm not asking you to say what exactly is it, but in your from your perspective, from what you're seeing, what is holding back James Young from being that powder keg that you're saying that he is going to be if given those minutes and given those opportunity? What's preventing that from just happening, which I think is what everybody has been wanting to see take place now already in the last couple of months?
It's funny because you'll see it happen a lot in sports. You'll have the guys that have all the talent in the world, but they're so unselfish to a fault. And then you'll see guys that aren't as talented, but then they don't realize they're not as talented and they're as selfish as can be. James Young falls into that first category. he actually looks like he's trying to be too good of a teammate, and he doesn't want to come in as a selfish-looking rookie. Like, he doesn't want to offend somebody. And it almost looks like it's in his head a little bit. I mean, there are times when he should easily take the ball to the basket, but he tries to pass the ball to somebody else because, you know, he feels like, oh, he's a rookie. He doesn't have the right to step in and shoot the ball, you know, all that much. So I think that he's playing unselfish to a fault. That's just what it looks like. And again, I get it. You know, rookies are to be, you know, seen and not heard, I guess, is the, you know, proper way to put it. You know, you come in, you know your role, you get the donuts, you get the coffee, you make the sandwiches, and you do your job as a rookie. But when you're a scorer like James Young is, your job as a rookie should be to come in and score and not worry about passing the ball to somebody else who doesn't have as good of a shot as you. So I think that's what it is. I just think it's in his head right now. I mean, you see, you know, bits and pieces of his game coming out, you know, every now and then. So I don't think he's got a lack of confidence. I just think he has a lack of aggression right now, again, because he doesn't want to come across as a brash, cocky rookie. And I think it's affecting the way he plays a little bit.
When you look at what's left for the Boston Celtics, and in a few moments we'll take a look at the schedule for the next couple of weeks on what's going to have to take place for the Celtics team to kind of put themselves kind of, you know, obviously they're going to have a quick turnaround for them to be able to get over this, you know, get over the loss of this game. But do you think that James Young is the X factor, so to speak, if given that opportunity for the Celtics? In a time when we've sat here and we've kind of scrutinized their ability to score the basketball and who you're looking to be your playmakers are, do you feel with confidence that James Young should be one of those people put in there? Or, you know, is what we're getting from James Young, with the exception of maybe a few additional minutes and taking some extra shots, is that going to be good enough to help this Celtics team possibly put themselves in a position to be in that playoff conversation?
Well, as far as X factors go, I don't necessarily think James Young is the biggest X factor. I think that's going to be somebody like Tyler Zeller or, you know, an obvious choice to be Isaiah Thomas. You know, Zeller, for obvious reasons, he's the only legitimate low post big that we have, low post 7-footer that we have. And Isaiah Thomas, because he was brought here with the specific mindset to be a go-to guy, the go-to scorer that we haven't had for a couple of years. With James Young, again, I think he can be a smaller X factor. I don't think he's going to be counted on to do, you know, be the main guy, the go-to guy, but I think he should be counted on to come in and do what he does best, you know, which is shoot the basketball. So let's call him an X factor. I think it's a little bit of a stretch, but I see what you're going with this. So I'd like to see more from him. I really would. I have high hopes for this kid. I really do think that he could come in and give us a little bit more than what we've seen so far. But I don't think that he should feel any pressure to do something like that, because, you know, again, we have guys on the team that should step up into that leadership role, should step up into that you know, veteran role, and let him do his job, which is, you know, pretty much make shots. You know, play defense and make shots.
This is the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics post-game show. Be sure to check us out, www.clnsradio.com. Time now to give our peak performance of the game. And in order to do that, you know, you got to make sure that you're staying brewed with Peak Organic Brewing. Clean, crisp, and delicious Peak's beer showcases delicious hops and grows grains from the local Northeast farmers. Delicious beers brewed with the best possible ingredients. Follow them at Peak Brewing on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook, facebook.com/Peak Brewing. So, peak performance of the game. Mike, I want to get your thoughts. Who is it that stood out for you here tonight, despite the loss for the Boston Celtics, that really kind of forged them ahead to even the idea that they would possibly have taken away this victory, pull out this upset against the Golden State Warriors?
Well, a couple guys put up a couple decent individual stat column stats, but I think overall the guy that came out and did the best for us, and I mentioned before, and he kind of picked up the intensity of the crowd with a couple of plays he made tonight. I think the guy that played the best for us was easily Brandon Bass. You know, he's a great defender. He's hard-nosed. He's very athletic. His dunks just absolutely made the Garden sound like the old Garden for a little while. His ability to attack the basket, make the mid-range jump shot, defend pretty much anybody on the floor, one through five, as best as he possibly can. I thought that what he brought to the table tonight was amazing, and I think he deserves the biggest shout out, and that's at least in my opinion, that's what I'm going to do for him, because, you know, again, great game, great overall game. You know, I think it was 16 and 12. Good solid defense, you know, kept fighting despite the fact that he's undersized, and I like what he brought for us tonight, and hopefully he continues to do so.
Yeah, 32 minutes of work. Brandon Bass, 6-12 shooting, 15 points, 12 rebounds, assist, but definitely the glue down there in the front court, and really made some key shots, and really a lot of hustle plays as well too. The 50-50 balls definitely gave the Celtics a lot of great second opportunities at 5 offensive rebounds. And so the Boston Celtics clearly could not have been in this game, could not have been up to as big as they were without the efforts of Brandon Bass. So he will get our peak performance, sponsored by Peak Brewing, peak performance of the game, Brandon Bass for the Boston Celtics. All right, let's forge ahead, Mike, and let's talk, you know, big picture now. The Celtics, you know, they had an impressive month of March. They went 7-4. Last time they had a winning record in a month was back in November, which is like almost the beginning of the season. So clearly, you know, the Celtics came out with the intent to really start off this month of March in a positive manner. And you could take away some good, you know, things from the fact that they could have won this basketball game. But starting off the month of March with a loss in Golden State, now you got to follow it up with a Tuesday night game against the Cleveland Cavaliers at Cleveland. The Cleveland Cavaliers suffering the loss today against the Houston Rockets. The matchups of perennial MVP candidates with James Harden and LeBron James. LeBron James clearly not happy with the fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers lost that game. They could have won that one. They lost it in overtime, 105-103. So now the Celtics have to travel out to Cleveland to take on an angry LeBron James. Cleveland Cavaliers team is obviously itching to redeem themselves from the Sunday showcase loss on primetime television. You know, what do you think of the Celtics' chances going in to the Lions' den and trying to pull teeth out of the Lions' mouth?
Well, I think if everything is even, I think we have a great shot at beating Cleveland. I really do. You know, we almost did it earlier in the season. You know, we seem to get up in big for these games. Again, I mean, we know who we're going up against, so we already know what we're going to expect from the people with the whistles. But I think that if we keep our heads about us and don't let that get to us, I think that we can sneak in there and come out with a win. Looking at the schedule, I see 12 games that we absolutely should win in the month of March. I think Utah should be a pretty easy game for us. I think New Orleans, well, we could beat them because Anthony Davis, even if he plays, he's not 100%. Orlando and Miami are both very winnable games. I don't think either one of those teams has what it takes. A second Orlando game. Indiana is an easier team this year. Philadelphia, obviously. Detroit, Brooklyn, Miami again. The Knicks and Charlotte. I think the only games that we're going to struggle with this year or this month probably are Cleveland. Memphis, I just think Memphis is a title favorite, and I think that they're just going to kind of take us out behind the shed and put a whooping through us just because physically they're dominant on the inside, and they're going to be able to attack our biggest weakness and then match our best strength, which is on the perimeter. So I think that's going to be a tough one. Oklahoma City is going to be a tough game just for the simple fact that, you know, Durant's the best player in the league, and they're playing very good basketball right now. The Spurs, again, they're the Spurs. You know, I mean, what can you say other than just give them their respect and expect to go out there, hopefully play well, put on a good showing. And then the Clippers. I think the Clippers, you know, while I'm not overly impressed, I don't think they're a legitimate contender. Just something reeks, you know, of a loss for that game for me. So I think that, you know, the month of March, we should come out of this month with about 12 wins. I think it looks like 18 or 19 games. I think we should come out with a positive record this month. Anything less than 500, though, would be very disappointing.
High expectations, Mike, but it is very doable when you look at this Boston Celtics team and what they do have to work with through the month. It looks like their schedule is very heavy laden with teams from the Southeast Division. You sprinkle a couple of games within their own division, the Atlantic Division, against Brooklyn, against New York on the back end of that schedule, Philadelphia, second half of that month. And it could even itself out a little bit nicely, you know, with the combination of some of these West Coast games that they got to play with Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and the Memphis Grizzlies on that docket. So I agree with you. I think that if the Boston Celtics stay focused, and really, if nothing else, they take this particular game with the Golden State Warriors, albeit this could have easily been a case of it being more matchup than anything else, but I think it's more about the Celtics and their ability to execute. And I think clearly what you saw from the Celtics team in the beginning of this game was that Brad Stevens wanted his team to go out and he wanted them to execute, to jump out against whoever their opposition is early and give themselves a chance to possibly win the game rather than always having to come from behind, which has been one of the daunting tasks with the Boston Celtics against good teams, is that they don't get off to good starts. But clearly you saw them do that at the outset of this game, putting up 65 points in the first half, albeit that they slowed down completely in the second. I think that's just a matter of them fighting through their own insecurities and being able to execute down the stretch. And whether that's more coaching or that's just having, you know, the right guys with the right mentality, the right mindset, battle-tested, going through games like these is probably going to help them, you know, as they get further and further into the month. And we'll see how much this type of loss allows them to be competitive against the teams like the Memphis Grizzlies, the San Antonio Spurs, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, because while everyone is not putting them this to be the winners against those, I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics could come away with a possible victory from them if they take losses like these. And humble themselves into understanding what they're going to have to do in order to beat the better teams like Golden State, Oklahoma City, Memphis, or the San Antonio Spurs. So despite the loss, man, still, just from my perspective, I think that the Celtics, you know, they did a really, really good job of improving on a couple of things. Clearly, they didn't just rest on their laurels of having a successful month in February. They came at the gate at the outset trying to take on one of the better teams in the NBA, and try to take them out on their home court. The Celtics were, and clearly this was a great effort. They just fell short, and hopefully they will definitely learn from this, because the next few games I think are going to be critical games if we're talking about the Celtics and the possible conversation of being in the playoff picture. Any final thoughts, Mike, with regards to the Celtics, you know, this game or just moving forward before we start talking about Tuesday night's game with Cleveland?
As expected, they went out there and played as hard as they can. You never have to question the effort of this team, which is always a great thing as a fan. You accept the wins and losses are going to, you know, they're going to be what they are. But effort should always happen. You should never, ever have to worry about the effort. And the effort was there. The good intentions were there. From some of the guys, but again, they just fell a little bit short to a team that, you know, they're the best team in the league for a reason. You know, they have two of the one of the best backcourts. You know, most people think of all time, easily the best offensive backcourt in the league right now. And they went out there and did their thing. So, but it was a good game, good learning experience. You know, a lot of things we could take away from this. It's good for not only players but for Coach Stevens to figure out how to overcome stuff like this so it doesn't happen again. You know, you don't like to see them blow a 26-point lead, but like you said at halftime on the air, even a 16-point lead to this team at halftime is like a 3-point lead, really, because they're such a good team and they shoot the ball so well. So, you know, good game tonight, good overall effort. Just, you know, tough to lose it at the end the way we did. Moving forward again, I think if we can go 12-6 in March, and get closer to 500 and stay in that playoff race, I think we're going to see good things, because the April schedule doesn't look too daunting whatsoever. So it's definitely crunch time here. So I think if we go anything, you know, we go by my expectations, 12-6. Anything less than, you know, 10-8 or 9-9, I think is going to pretty much put us out of the playoff race for good. You know what? Then again, we are in the East, so who knows? But it's going to be a lot of fun. This next 10-game stretch or so, playing a bunch of patsies, could make or break our season and determine which way we're going to go moving forward for the rest of the season into the offseason.
Definitely. So it's a six-team race right now for the last two seeds in the Eastern Conference, and a game and a half separates them. The Celtics tonight lose a tough one to the Warriors, 106-101. That puts their record at 23-34. And so now we're just going to have to watch closely the next task up. We've got to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers on the road. So it's definitely going to be a tough one. But listen, the talent level of this team and the upside is definitely there. So we're definitely going to be pulling for these guys to go out there and to show up LeBron, K-Love, and Kyrie Irving, show them what Celtic pride is all about. I'd like to thank our special guest, Jared Weiss for joining on with us and our callers for chiming in and giving us their take. I'd like to also thank my co-host Mike for helping us break down tonight's game. Boston Celtics lose a tough one, 106-101. Be sure to tune in to CLNS Radio on Tuesday night when the Boston Celtics will take on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Tip-off time is at 7 p.m., so be sure to tune in around 9 p.m. Eastern time. The post-game show will be posted. We'll definitely have our peoples on it to discuss the game, give you post-game segments, and hopefully chime in with the callers and let us know what you think about the Celtics' effort come Tuesday night. So, for the Celtics post-game show, Cal Lee, my man Mike Munger, we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch up with you on Tuesday. You guys have a great, great Monday. Celtics lose again, 106-101 to the Golden State Warriors. You guys take it easy.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.